Welcome to the Deep Dive. If you're joining us today, well, I know exactly who you are.
Yeah, we do.
You're someone who loves to learn, and you want to do it quickly, thoroughly, and honestly without feeling completely overwhelmed by the constant flood of information out there.
Right. There's just so much noise.
There really is. You want the insights, you want the multiple perspectives, and you want those real aha moments that you can actually use in real life. And
Exactly.
that's exactly what we do here. We take a stack of information, pull out the most fascinating threads, and just distill it all down to the essentials.
Because it's really all about cutting through that noise to find the strategies that actually make a difference, in everyday life. And today's topic is incredibly practical. We are looking at something that might seem routine on the surface, but the implications, they ripple out much further than you might initially think.
Yeah, we're pulling our insights today from a really comprehensive practical guide put together by AngelSense. It was just updated on March 2, 2026.
Yep, very recent.
And the guide is titled Public Transportation Safety for Autistic Teens. Our mission for this deep dive is very specific. We are going to unpack how the process of learning to navigate public transportation can completely transform.
Right.
We want to look at how it goes from being this overwhelming, anxiety-inducing hurdle, which it is for so many, into a major milestone of independence and confidence for autistic teens.
And framing why this matters right up front is just crucial. I mean, for a lot of people, the default rite of passage for a teenager is getting a driver's license.
Oh, yeah, getting the keys to the car.
Exactly. That piece of plastic represents freedom, but driving simply isn't an option for everyone. For many autistic teens, public transit is the absolute key to unlocking their world.
It's everything.
It is. It's how they get to a college campus, how they hold down a job, how they engage in social activities without relying on a parent to chauffeur them around everywhere. But getting from point A to point B safely, it requires significantly more than just buying a bus ticket or swiping a subway pass. It requires a thoughtfully designed strategy that really anticipates the reality of the environment.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the baseline transit experience can be intense for anyone. I know I have a terrible sense of direction, and just navigating a new subway line during rush hour, it spikes my heart rate.
Oh, absolutely. It's stressful.
You're trying to figure out this complex, ever-changing maze. The schedules change without warning, and you're just surrounded by unpredictable noise, glaring lights, crowds of strangers pushing past you.
Yeah, that's just a regular Tuesday.
Right, that is just the baseline reality of public transportation. So take that baseline chaos, and how does it specifically impact an autistic teen? What are the actual roadblocks here?
To understand those roadblocks, we really have to talk about executive function. The guide breaks down four specific areas of executive function limitations that make public transit uniquely difficult or even dangerous in these scenarios.
Let's pause on that for a second. For listeners who might just hear executive function as a clinical buzzword,
Sure.
what does that actually look like in the brain during a commute?
Think of executive function as the air traffic controller of the brain. It manages incoming information and decides how you should react. The four areas the text highlights are problem solving, time management, emotional control, and working memory.
Okay, so problem solving, time management, emotional control, and working memory.
Exactly. So imagine a teen is at a bus stop. Time management is what gets them there before the bus arrives. But let's say the bus is detoured. Suddenly, they need problem-solving skills to figure out an alternate route.
Right, the plan changed.
And its unexpected change can trigger massive anxiety, putting immense strain on their emotional control. And finally, working memory. They might have memorized the new complex navigation route perfectly in the quiet of their living room.
But then they step outside.
Yes, under the stress of a noisy street corner, that working memory can easily vanish. The air traffic controller gets overwhelmed, and the planes, so to speak, start circling.
That sounds completely exhausting. I know caregivers carry a lot of fear about sending their teens out into that environment, but is there actual data to back up how stressful these transit trips are?
There is, and the numbers are honestly staggering. The guide highlights data from the UCAN2 study, and these statistics validate everything caregivers are worried about.
What do the numbers show?
According to the study, 87% of autistic people using transit endure sensory overload.
Wow, 87%. That is nearly everyone.
It's a massive majority. On top of that, 81% feel anxious about the trip itself, but this next number is the one that really paints a picture of the daily struggle. 71% are nervous before they even leave the house.
So the anxiety doesn't start at the noisy bus stop.
No.
It starts at the breakfast table. It starts while they're tying their shoes.
Precisely. and the toll it takes is heavy. The final statistic notes that 68% need to spend actual time recovering after a trip is over. It is physically and mentally draining.
68% need recovery time? That's huge.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, understanding those exact numbers is the fundamental first step for caregivers and families. It proves that the exhaustion the team is feeling is entirely real, it's scientifically documented, and it's not an overreaction.
Right, it's not just them being difficult.
Not at all. When nearly 70% of individuals need recovery time just from taking a bus, it sets the stage for why rigorous, structured preparation isn't just a nice idea. It is the absolute antidote to that anxiety. You cannot eliminate the chaos of the subway, but you can build a framework to handle it.
So how do we actually build that framework? If a family is listening to this right now and wants to start the process, what does the blueprint for success actually look like?
The guide lays out a really methodical approach, and it begins long before anyone steps outside. It starts with route planning. Modern technology has made this first step incredibly accessible.
Yeah, we all have maps on our phones now.
Exactly. The text recommends sitting down with the teen and using travel planning apps like Google Maps, Move It, or local transit apps to map out the exact journey.
See, I use those apps all the time, but I usually just glance at the route and start walking. I imagine the preparation here needs to be a bit more robust than a quick glance.
Much more robust. You don't just look at the app. The strategy involves taking physical screenshots of the maps. It involves writing down a meticulous step-by-step record of the stations, the specific transit lines they need to look for, and the exact times.
So you're putting it all down on paper?
Yes, you are externalizing their working memory. If that stress hits and their mind goes blank, the paper or the screenshot holds the memory for them. Alongside that documentation, the guide heavily recommends using social stories.
Social stories. What exactly is a social story in this context? How does a caregiver use one?
A social story is a tool used to describe a situation, skill, or concept in terms of relevant social cues, perspectives, and common responses. Think of it as a personalized narrative that manages expectations.
Okay, could you give an example of what that sounds like?
Sure. A caregiver might write down, when I get to the train station, it might be loud. People might be walking quickly. If the train is full, I will wait for the next one.
Oh, I see.
It gives the teen a mental rehearsal of the social environment before they ever experience it.
That makes a lot of sense.
Oh.
You are scripting the unknown. So you have the route mapped, you have the steps written down, and you've read through the social story. What is the next phase? Do they just head out during morning rush hour?
Definitely not. The planning phase transitions into physical practice, which the guide calls the dry run.
The dry run.
Right. The dry run is about practicing the route together, but crucially, you do it during low traffic hours. Imagine a quiet Sunday morning. You want the stakes to be as low as possible. And while you are doing this dry run, you purposely role play what-if situations.
Like throwing little curveballs at them while things are calm.
Yes, exactly. You ask, what if we miss this bus? Or what if this specific exit is closed for construction? You practice the problem solving in real time, in the actual environment, so that if things go wrong later on a busy Tuesday, the teen has a mental script of what to do.
It sounds like a really supportive way to build confidence. But how does a parent know when to let go? You can't just do a couple of Sunday morning dry runs and then suddenly hand over a monthly pass and walk away.
No, the guide describes this as a gradual release of responsibility. It is about building autonomy step by step. They suggest strategies like shadowing from a distance.
What does that look like?
Well, for example, a parent might ride in the same train car, but sit a few rows away. Then, as things run smoothly over a few weeks, they might leave the teen to do a portion of the trip entirely alone. Independence is not an all or nothing leap. It is a gradual process that must respect the teen's comfort level.
I can see how that shadowing phase would be reassuring. And I suppose the teen having their smartphone with those transit apps running gives the parents some peace of mind, too. They can always check where they are.
That brings up a massive caveat mentioned in the text regarding technology.
Oh.
We rely so heavily on our smartphones today, and mobile apps are fantastic backup tools for a teen to check their location. However, the guide provides a strong warning. These mobile apps are often completely unreliable underground.
Well, of course. You hit a subway tunnel and the GPS signal drops, or the cell service just vanishes completely.
Precisely. Relying on a mobile app as the primary navigation method in a subway system is dangerous because it can disappear the moment the teen needs it most.
That's a scary thought.
It is. The app must only be considered a secondary tool. The primary tool has to be the preparation, the written steps, and the internalized knowledge from those dry runs.
Good point about the dead zones.
Yeah.
And speaking of things going wrong, let's talk about the inevitable hiccup. Because no matter how much you prepare, the reality of public transit is that eventually a bus will break down.
Inevitably.
A train will be delayed or someone will miss a connection. It is going to happen.
Yeah.
How does an autistic teen advocate for themselves with transit staff or with strangers when they are suddenly thrown into a high-stress, unexpected situation?
This is where communication strategies become lifelines. The guide details several accessible communication tools that boost safety and immediately reduce panic. First, there are the analog low-tech tools. We are talking about scripted, written phrases on index cards.
Just simple index cards.
Exactly. If a teen is lost and dysregulated, formulating a sentence to a stranger can be impossible. But they can simply reach into their pocket and hand a card to a bus driver that says, "I am lost. Can you help me find the red line?"
It takes so much pressure off.
It does. There are also phone-based text templates pre-written for common situations.
So they don't even have to type. They just hit send on a template to their parents.
Right.
What about teens who might struggle with that level of interaction during a meltdown?
For more complex interactions, the text points to portable AAC devices, which stands for Augmentative and Alternative Communication Devices.
AC devices?
Yes. Think of a specialized tablet or an app where a teen can press an icon or a picture, and the device speaks the phrase out loud for them. And crucially, the guide emphasizes the absolute necessity of emergency contact and ID cards.
Just to have on them at all times.
Exactly. If a child becomes completely nonverbal or unresponsive during a severe meltdown, that ID card speaks for them and tells first responders exactly who to call.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because while those analog tools and ID cards are foundational, the guide also talks about some incredible high-tech solutions designed specifically for the moments when a teen gets profoundly lost or faces a major disruption.
Yes, the tech is amazing.
I know the source highlights AngelSense AI-based technology. Can you walk us through what that actually looks like in practice?
The AngelSense assistive technology is built specifically for these vulnerable scenarios. The features mentioned in the text are really comprehensive. First, it offers one- and two-way communication. But what makes it unique is a feature called automatic pickup.
Automatic pickup. How does that work?
Well, imagine the teen is too overwhelmed to physically answer their phone. The caregiver can initiate a call to the device, and it answers automatically, opening a line of communication.
Wow.
The parent can immediately speak to the teen to calm them down or just listen in to assess the environment and see if they need to intervene.
That is a massive safety net. What other features does it have?
It includes an SOS call button for immediate emergencies, and it utilizes automatic notifications. This means if the teen misses their designated stop or wanders off the planned route, the caregiver is instantly alerted by the system without the teen having to do anything.
It is fascinating to think about how that technology changes the experience for the teen.
When you analyze those features from a psychological perspective, it is a profound shift. You are taking a teen who might otherwise be in a position of extreme vulnerability in a crisis, and you are providing them with a concrete mechanism for active self-advocacy.
Right. They aren't just stranded.
The SOS button isn't just an alarm. It is a tool of empowerment. It tells the teen, you have control. You have a direct lifeline. It reduces the cognitive load of problem solving in a crisis down to a single manageable physical action, pressing a button.
That's incredible.
That shift from vulnerable passenger to active self-advocate is monumental for their development.
It changes the entire dynamic of the trip. But even with the best communication tools and the most advanced AI tech, we still have to navigate the physical environment itself.
Yes, the environment is the wild card.
And that brings us to managing the sensory landscape. The guide paints a vivid scenario of what a sensory trigger looks like in the real world. Let's go back to that late bus we talked about earlier. Because it's late, a huge crowd is gathered at the stop. When it finally pulls up, there's widespread confusion. People are pushing, crowding the doors, the brakes are screeching, and there's a massive increase in noise levels.
It's overwhelming for anyone.
Right. But for someone with environmental sensitivities or sensory processing disorder, this isn't just an annoyance. It triggers a massive stress response.
It creates an internal chaos that mirrors the external chaos we just described. To mitigate that, the guide lists a specific sensory toolkit that caregivers and teens should prepare before they leave the house. These are practical, tangible items used to keep the teen calm during those environmental flare-ups.
What goes into a toolkit like that?
It includes things like noise-canceling headphones to block out the harsh sounds of the station or the screeching brakes. It includes sunglasses to soften the intense, flickering fluorescent lights you often find in subway tunnels.
Oh, those lights are the worst.
They really are. The list also suggests having mobile calming apps readily available on their phone, physical fidget tools to help burn off nervous energy, and weighted items like a weighted lap pad that provide grounding, deep pressure therapy.
So they have options.
Exactly. Having these items physically on hand means the teen has immediate, accessible coping mechanisms the second the environment becomes hostile.
It is about having an immediate physical defense. But the guide doesn't just focus on what to pack in their bag. It also mentions that how you act in the space matters. What are the behavioral or spatial strategies they recommend?
The spatial strategies are all about positioning. For instance, making a deliberate decision to sit at the very back of the bus.
Why the back?
By doing that, you avoid the constant flow of people crowding around the front doors.
Huh.
You limit the number of people moving in your direct line of sight, which reduces visual overload.
That's really smart.
Another spatial strategy is situational awareness, knowing exactly how to get to the nearest exit at all times. It is using spatial positioning as a form of sensory defense.
That is incredibly proactive. It is almost like choreographing your environment to protect your peace of mind.
And this is where the real value lies for you, the listener. Anticipating these sensory overloads and having a toolkit and a spatial plan for them doesn't just make the ride a little quieter or a little more pleasant. It fundamentally improves the teen's emotional regulation.
Because they aren't constantly fighting the environment.
Exactly. When their sensory input is managed, their brain isn't thrown into a state of fight or flight panic. And because they aren't in a panic, their executive functioning, that air traffic controller we talked about, remains intact.
It all connects back to executive function.
It does. Which means their decision-making during a crisis is vastly improved. The noise-canceling headphones aren't just for comfort. They are a vital safety device that protects the teen's ability to think clearly.
So what does this all mean? When we look at everything we've unpacked today, from understanding those daunting UCANTU study statistics, to mapping out dry runs, to utilizing AAC devices, AngelSense tech, and sensory toolkits, the core message really distills down to this.
Yeah.
Caregivers should never feel pressured to rush independence. It is not a race. By deeply respecting the teen's comfort levels, by celebrating the small progressions, and by utilizing a strong, multi-layered safety net, the entire paradigm shifts.
It really does.
Public transportation transforms from being this massive source of anxiety into one of the most powerful builders of real-world skills imaginable.
The beauty of this approach is its broader application. The skills we have been discussing today, the methodical problem solving when a route suddenly changes, the self-advocacy required to hand a script to a bus driver, and the ultimate trust the teen builds in their own abilities, those skills do not vanish when they step off the bus.
They carry them forward.
They extend far beyond transit. They apply to navigating the complex social landscape of a college campus, advocating for themselves in a workplace, and managing unexpected changes in their everyday life. Mastering the bus route is really about giving them the tools to master their environment.
It's life-changing stuff.
It is. We've talked extensively today about how to equip neurodivergent teens to survive and adapt to the chaos of public transportation. But it raises an important question. If mastering a simple bus route requires this much specialized armor and strategy, how might we rethink the way we design our public infrastructure from the ground up to naturally accommodate everyone rather than forcing them to adapt to the noise?
That is a brilliant question to leave off on and something we all need to consider as our cities continue to grow. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. We hope you take these insights, keep learning, keep connecting the dots, and apply them wherever they are needed in your world. Until next time.